All right. Hey there, everyone. This is Bram Kanstein, and you're listening to Bitcoin for Millennials. Together with my guests on this podcast, I go on a journey to discover how our current financial system works, why it's flawed, and why Bitcoin is the most relevant technology that you, my fellow millennials, should understand and adopt. In this episode, I'm joined by Tony Jasbeck. He has over 25 years of experience in cybersecurity, privacy, and encryption, and is a founding partner of the Bitcoin consultancy firm, The Bitcoin Way. They are a trusted provider of innovative and comprehensive Bitcoin services, helping individuals and businesses navigate the world of Bitcoin with ease. Motivated by his firsthand experience of economic collapse in Lebanon, Tony is dedicated to help individuals gain sovereignty by adopting Bitcoin and making sure they follow secure self-custody practices when they do. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and welcome, Tony.
Thank you for having me, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's super interesting that you have this experience in Lebanon with an economic collapse. You know, like in the finance macro Bitcoin space, a lot of people talk about Lebanon and other countries experiencing this. You know, but it always feels like something that is far away, you know, especially for people that live in the Western world. I regularly say on this podcast, you know, especially millennials grew up in the best time to ever grow up of any person to ever live, for the whole of humanity. So when you hear like stories like this or descriptions of this, it doesn't feel real, you know, it feels far away. Like, can you share something about your experience? Of when and how that happened and how that shaped you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, unfortunately, this is not an event or an experience that I wish upon anyone. You know, like you said, I mean, when you live in certain parts of the world, you know, you feel almost immune to such scenarios, simply because you make yourself believe this delusion that somehow, because you are where you are, that nothing will faze you, that somebody will protect you from whatever it is that you think you're safe from. That is a myth. That is something that I used to believe in as well. But, you know, when you live through something like what has happened in Lebanon, it is the equivalent of someone dropping a nuke on your life. This is exactly how it feels like, and that's exactly the type of damage that it does. When you go to sleep one night thinking everything is okay, and you wake up the next day to realize that your entire life has been swept under your rug, leaving you with absolutely nothing. So this is the shock factor of this is is almost undescribable, because it's so extreme that you don't really know how to react in the moment. Mm-hmm. It takes a little while before it actually sets in that, shit, all my life savings are now gone, you know, and I literally have nothing except for the 20 bucks or 50 bucks that I have in my pocket. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a very scary position to be in. I mean, I don't think anyone, no matter how strong you think you are, is ever prepared for such a traumatic shock. It's not a physical, like you're not harmed physically, but it almost feels like, you know, a physical sledgehammer to your entire body. Mm. Because of all the rush of adrenaline that's going through you, not knowing which direction to turn, especially considering that there's no one there to help you. Yeah. When this whole thing blew up, nobody was answering phones. You know, you tried to reach out to the banks to see, you know, what the hell's going on. There's no answer at the banks. So, you know, this is where it's a lot of people haven't come out basically from the destruction of something like this. This is what I was fortunate enough, and it took me a very long time, honestly. Like, on some days I wonder how I'm even sitting here doing what I'm doing. Considering what I just went through, and I consider myself a very strong individual. I'm rarely fazed by anybody's opinion. Like, I don't really care. I do what I know has to be done. But, you know, like, you, no matter how tough you think you are never prepared for something like this.
Yeah.
And this is a message that I work very hard in trying to sort of like ingrain in people's heads, to let them know that it doesn't really matter how rich you think you are, how many zeros you see on that screen. This is an illusion that you have. There is no money in your bank account.
It's not real.
It's not real. This is just a number on a screen that they tell you have, mm-hmm. but the money is not there. and it can be swiped away from you just as quickly as it was for me and every single individual living in that country, unfortunately.
Yeah. And this is also, we'll talk about, you know, how Bitcoin brings sovereignty to people. But when you share this, I of course also think about, you know, as a millennial from the West who never had problems like this, right? Like you and I ended up on the same conclusion, you know, about Bitcoin and that we need it and that other people need it. And I find it so fascinating that what you just described, right? Like you have to experience it to understand that no one is coming to save you and that the money is not real and that the trust you put in third parties before also was not real or not based on any reality, right? And you saw that because you experienced that. And although we came to the same conclusion, I had to like conceptualize that in a way, right? Because I did not experience that. And I don't know like how I did that and then ended up to the same conclusion as you. But I do see that as like for people in the West, it's so hard to, yeah, almost like first understand and then kind of like integrate that the trust you put in third parties is almost like the I don't know if that's an English word, but it's deferring your own responsibility over your own life to another party and basically kind of like praying or hoping that, you know, stuff doesn't blow up. But when it does, still no one is coming to save you, right? So in the moment of this financial collapse, no one's coming to save you, but you have to realize that that is currently also not the case, although you see numbers in your bank app on your screen, right? There, it's not a different, the situation is not different, although the numbers are there now and maybe later they are not, but it's not a different thing, right? It's the same.
Absolutely. I mean, what makes it difficult is that you are born into this lie. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you first land, when you're first born, you know, that's all you're taught. Your parents tell you this is the way it is because that's the way they've been taught. So this lie, this scam has been going on for a very long time. And when you're born into it, well, you accept it as the norm, right? And as long as it doesn't really directly impact you as you're growing up, you don't give it much thought. You know, you just assume that that's just the way it is. You know, you go do your work. You have your money in your bank. You're able to afford whatever it is that you want. So as far as you're concerned, life's good. Okay. And it's good as long as it stays good. But when you quickly realize that every Ponzi has an expiry date. Okay. Now, I mean, this fiat Ponzi has been going on for almost 100 years now. And we are living in, you know, a moment of time where we're seeing it collapse. This mm-hmm. is why the events that are taking place now are historical, because we've never, like, I never expected to be living, you know, in a time where I'm going to be seeing this or even like realizing that this is something like this is actually possible.
That's so, also why it's hard to understand.
Yes,
right,
that's exactly
again
why
if
it's
you
hard.
If you read about Roman Empire collapsing or, well, same Lebanon collapsing is in the modern times, right? But just because it's so far away, you cannot comprehend that you could also be in the middle of that, basically.
Yes, exactly. So you have to accept that you have to unlearn that anything you thought about money is complete rubbish. The money that you're using to buy stuff is not money. It's toilet paper. It's worthless. The only reason why it has any value is because the world has been misled to believe that it has value and people are still accepting it. But as it's becoming very, you know, everybody's noticing now that, you know, things are becoming more expensive, inflation, all of a sudden everybody's familiar with that word that used to be like a fancy vocabulary word that reserved only to people in the financial sector. Now everybody's talking about inflation. They know that the prices go up. Oh, it's inflation. You know, they're becoming more familiar with with that whole world, and they're realizing that, hold on a second, something's not right here. You know, like I make $2,000 a month, but fuck, my expenses are $2,600 a month. How am I gonna pay for it? Mm. Like the prices are going up, but my salary, my income is not going up. So there's a problem here. And then you know a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, okay, well, I have to work harder. Well, no, you don't have to work harder. You have to come to sit down and realize that the reason why you're in such a predicament is because it's your your you're saving your time and value in a rigged system. You cannot beat the system. It's like having a bucket with a hole at the bottom and you're trying to fill it up at a rate faster than it's leaking from the bottom.
Yeah. You're at the bottom of the bucket, by the way.
You're at the bottom of the bucket. And at some point, you know, you're just going to lose. Mm-hmm. And this is what's starting to manifest, you know, globally. In some countries, you know, a lot faster than others. But ultimately, it's going to come everywhere. And it doesn't really matter how large of a number you think you have on that bank account. You're going to very quickly see it shrink until mm-hmm. it ultimately hits zero for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I love this angle of Bitcoin, right? I will get to some technical stuff as well, but I love this angle of Bitcoin because this really emphasizes, you know, the problems or the problems that people should be aware of first before they can even be susceptible to, you know, what we think is the solution, right? And what you just said, do you think that is like the main thing people need to unlearn? Like, it's not one thing. It's basically like the entire structure around what you think is money is wrong, right? That's the thing that people need to unlearn.
Yes, and the thing is, it's when you try to explain this to someone, the reason why they think you're crazy is because it's so out there, so extreme in what's going on, that you're essentially telling them that all your life was a lie, that you've been an idiot, you know, since the day you were born until now. And now you have to accept that and believe what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So when you're talking to individuals, especially those of an older age that have lived their life and, you know, have been mm-hmm. okay for the most part of it, but only now recently are maybe starting to feel the pinch, you know, it's very difficult to, you know, like sort of rechange that, that mindset until they're in a predicament where they have no choice but to listen to something that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
When they actually have the problem, right?
Yes,
it's hard to show them the problem before they actually understand that they're already experiencing it.
That's
right?
And it's usually the higher net worth individuals that have the most to lose, even though they don't believe so. I mean, some high net worth individuals that I've spoken to are extremely arrogant because, you know, like many others before them, you know, they think they are untouchable because they've got 17 zeros on their bank account on their monitors, you know, nothing will faze them. But 3 years ago in Lebanon, there were also folks with 15 zeros on the screen that now have only one. One zero.
Yeah. Nothing before the zero.
And nothing before the zero.
Yeah.
So if you think that your numbers of zeros is like somehow makes you immune or godlike, you're committing financial suicide. It's a very dangerous delusion that you're hiding behind, and it's a false one. Whether you believe me or don't believe me, it doesn't really matter. The result is the same.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's why I, again, like this angle, I find the most interesting, like for people to get into Bitcoin, because that personal, that this is like personal development in a sense, right? Like understanding that you don't understand everything and what you just said, like that, basically, what you base your beliefs or understanding on is something that is not grounded in reality. It's not true, right? And I've shared this before on this podcast as well. Like for me, I was already into Bitcoin, but I was 30. I had a mortgage. I worked at a bank until I talked to a colleague who said, "Did you know that the money in the bank is not yours?" And I said, "Well, sorry, what do you mean?" And then we had lunch for an hour and he explained to me. And I had the same realization as you just said, like, I'm an idiot. I'm participating in something that I do not understand, and I actually work at a bank, right? So how would other people that are not even in a position to actually, you know, gather this information, or, well, I had the luck to run into someone, you know, who started talking with me about it. Like, why would someone even start thinking about this huge problem, actually?
Well, the thing is, not only the money is worthless, but you have to understand that the people who design this money, these are criminals. These are professional thieves. You know, this all the organization behind fiat money is a criminal organization. These are not people that have your best interest in mind at any point in time. This is a rigged scheme designed to benefit that 1% sitting right next to that money printer who's essentially living life for free at the expense of everybody's time and energy. So they don't care what happens to you. They've designed the system for them to benefit, and to you to be a peon, a peasant, a slave, a nobody in this, like a little hamster running on that wheel. Except it may have been fine at the beginning before the Ponzi became too big to hold itself. Mm. But now that it's at the end and things are blowing up left and right, now it's becoming more apparent who is behind, who is responsible for all this stuff, who is responsible for all the destruction in the world, who is funding all the wars around the world, who is behind all the genocides and the murders and the innocent deaths of human beings, who is behind it? It's all of those behind the money printer. How else are you going to fund it? If you have a limitless capability to print money out of thin air to pay for anything, then you can do anything.
Mm.
So,
and then you have to ask yourself, why are some people poor, right? And that is kind of like one of the starting points, I'd
but
say.
But that's the
right?
thing. Yeah. It goes back to my point. If you're the one printing the money, you live for free forever. Mm. But the more you print, those that have to work for that money, well, then the value of that toilet paper that they're holding becomes worth less and less and less the more you print and print and print. This is mm-hmm. what's happening. And yeah. And ultimately, all of them, because they're all based on the same scam, they're all going to zero. The yeah. US dollar, maybe the global reserve, okay, it'll be the last one to crumble, but it's on its way out. It's not immune. It's designed in the same way. Yeah. There's nothing special about the US dollar that distinguishes it from the euro or any other currency.
Yeah. Now that we're talking about this, I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of protests currently, of course, you know, around Israel, Palestine. Now that we're talking, I'm thinking this is actually a great opportunity, I'd say, also to educate people, you know, the people who are protesting. Also, you know, people who don't want war, nobody wants war, obviously, to help them understand that they are actually paying for it.
Yes.
Right? So you're objecting something that you are paying for it. You don't know that you're paying for it, but maybe that is like an angle we should actually utilize, right? To show them that, yes, you should be mad. You should be even more mad because you're paying for the bombs that they're using, you know, that you are protesting against. And yeah, it's just a thought that I had now. Like, I think that would be good because I feel that, you know, there's lots of dimensions where, you know, lots of threads that we could show people that they can pull, you know, to get on their own path to learn about Bitcoin, right? I don't think you can orange pill someone. You have to orange pill yourself to understand Bitcoin, right? But this could be one of those things to actually make this even more clear that all of the wars are actually funded by the people, you know, by the civilians that are also the casualties.
That's right.
Of these wars, right? That, so it's like a perpetual thing.
That's right. And if you want to stop this, you have to opt out of the system to defund it. You know, that's yeah. the only way. I mean, there's two ways you can solve this. Either the world goes to war globally, you know, and starts killing each other, and then it's survival of the fittest. Or you try the peaceful way, which is what Bitcoin somehow miraculously was able to do, was to peacefully defund those crimes. You know, if you opt out of the fiat system,
yeah,
well then, you know, it crumbles eventually on its own because nobody's using it. It becomes worthless that way.
Yeah.
But as long as you stay stuck in it, one, not only are you screwing yourself as a person because your entire value and life savings are becoming meaningless, but you are continuing to empower the scam, the Ponzi, the crimes, whatever you want to call them, all yeah. those bad things. You continue to support by being stuck into that system that, you know, that is fueled by it.
Yeah. Well, and it's especially true, I think, like I view getting into Bitcoin not as buying Bitcoin. I see it as moving wealth from, you know, a crumbling and flawed system to a system that provably works, right? So you move that away. And that's in line with what you're saying, right? Like, as long as you keep your savings, your wealth, in a bank, they can use that money to, you know, to loan out again, to create new money, etc., to fund all these things. But once you move that little block of wealth or savings that you have to this other system, then it's out, right? And then you A, save yourself, and B, also you know, make the pile of money that they can utilize smaller in a sense.
Yeah, and like fundamentally, like if you put that all aside, I mean, who in their right mind, knowing everything that's known now, would want to continue living their life knowing that the money that they own, first of all, is not theirs. Mm. Second of all, is not controlled by them. And third of all, can be taken away, censored, weaponized, sanctioned, whatever you want to call it, against you at a click of a button.
Yeah.
By the decisions of some random psychopath that just decides one day that, you know, he wants things a certain way. And then all of a sudden, now you're labeled as a criminal or a terrorist or whatever other label that they give you.
Yeah. So you've talked a lot about like the urgency also to get into Bitcoin. Why yes. does everyone need Bitcoin and why now? And also in the West.
Bitcoin is your ticket to freedom. Forget the number go up. Forget the dollar signs that you see on the screen every time, you know, the Bitcoin pumps. This is not what Bitcoin's about. What Bitcoin is about is that without it, you are going to be living a life of a slave, of a meaningless donkey whose life is dictated by someone that doesn't give a damn about you, that thinks that they know how you should eat, sleep, drink, and live your life. That's what the Bitcoin value is. The number go up, that's like a side effect of the whole
indicator of adoption, basically.
Yes, because of the finite supply. There's 21 million. Well, technically, there's less because there's about 5 million of them have been lost, God knows where. So technically, we have about 17 million. So as the world understands this and starts to realize, okay, well, this is what I want now and not that garbage toilet paper that I've been saving in. Well, demand shock is infinite. Supply shock is fixed. Boom, number goes up. You know, this is where the number goes up phenomenon, how everybody gets excited now over it. That's because when you don't have an understanding of everything, that's all that turns you on is when you see that number turn green. But this is not what it's about. When you realize that your life is like a life of a slave or a free human being, which is what I think the world at some point as we transition will be divided into. There's going to be part of the world that are going to be living like kings and queens, free to do whatever the hell they want. And there's going to be another part of them that are going to be attached to some digital ID, like some village donkey, that have to make sure that their point system doesn't go below a certain threshold so they can continue buying their food, they can continue traveling, they can continue existing, so to speak. So if you're that type of individual that wants to live the life of a village donkey, then do nothing. But if you have any form of self-value, self-dignity, if you have a family, if you have kids that you care about, that you want them to live in a future where they make their own decisions and not have them been subjugated by the decisions of a criminal organization, then it's your obligation, your duty, your responsibility as a parent to get your funds out of the system and as close as possible as to one Bitcoin or more as fast as you can before they come in and vacuum clean the supply from all global exchanges, at which point, unless you're sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars, you're not buying anything anymore. It's not to say you're not going to benefit from Bitcoin, but at that point, your days of casually strolling in and buying, you know, X amount, those are gone. You will have to earn Bitcoin. And by that means, you have to be offering some form of value that someone is willing to pay for. So you will still benefit from Bitcoin, but it'll become much harder and take much longer for you to get, you know, the amount that you can easily do right now, since we are currently in the transition phase.
Yeah, a few points there. I think what I love that also comes back here is that once you understand that Bitcoin is the hardest money to ever exist, the best money to ever exist, you wouldn't want to be rewarded in anything else when you deliver, you know, a product or a service or a job or whatever, right? So people will start demanding Bitcoin, but the people who have the Bitcoin and want to pay for these services, they want the highest quality service because they have the hardest money to ever exist, right? So that will create an interesting world, I'd say, where, you know, when we talk about like meritocracy or just who is the best person to provide a certain product or service, like you have to actually deliver value. There's no, some people say rent seeking anymore, right? You cannot profit from the fact that currently in the fiat system, you can just, tinker around and do stuff. Like you have to actually start adding value because the money is so hard that, Yeah, you have to compete more to actually be able to earn that new money, right? I found it interesting that comes back a lot. But also, I wanted to ask you, like, what advice would you give, you know, a millennial who's just starting out to explore Bitcoin for personal finance? You actually nailed it, I think, when you said, when you realize, you know, that you're currently in a system that is where you gave your responsibility away, or the responsibility about, you know, what the money you use is worth, if it's actually yours, you know, who holds it, if any is in the bank, by the way, if you want to take it out. Like, do you want that? Or do you want to get, and I think this is why people find it hard, right? Do you want to get all the responsibility, but then you're actually free, right? So I've talked to friends of mine who, like one friend, I think his net worth is like 5 million or something. And he once said to me, like, okay, but if I have 1 million in Bitcoin, am I solely responsible for the security? And of course, you know, there's different ways you can set this up. But I think the answer is yes, right? You are the ultimate gatekeeper in a sense, right? So all that responsibility that you never experienced before, because you put all the money in the bank, is now yours. And I see that people struggle with that as well. Like, what is your experience there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the whole responsibility factor, I mean, for some bizarre reason, it petrifies people, and I don't understand why. And for a lot of people, I think it's just laziness or fear. It's a combination of laziness and fear. Some folks are so afraid somehow, even some of the most educated folks, you know, they're so afraid that somehow the government is going to come and stop this. So they paralyze themselves in this fear, you know, and that restricts them from doing any rational decision. So they remain stuck in this Ponzi because of their fear. But what they don't realize is by them being stuck, all they're doing is continuing to empower that rubbish into remaining into existence. Whereas if you take the steps to opt out, nobody's saying opt out for overnight into 100%, but at least start making a transgression and start sitting down and learning and studying as to why this is important. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, the more an individual learns and understands, the higher the allocation that they contribute to Bitcoin on themselves. Like, as their conviction grows, so yes, does their allocation, because they realize, hold on a second, what am I saving this money in the bank for? This is complete rubbish. I don't want this thing anymore. I want that. And another thing with Bitcoin is that it's a virtual item. It's not a physical substance. Like, if I gave you a barrel of diamonds and I put it in your living room and I told you, here, it's yours, what would you do? You'd barricade the whole living room. You'd, yes, put up walls. You'd bring your wife. You'd make her sit on top of that barrel so it doesn't move. You know, like, you would do anything because you see that barrel of diamonds sitting in front of you. And the ideas that will come to your head to protect it are infinite at that point. But Bitcoin, it's an invisible thing. It's a virtual currency. Like, you can't touch it. So for a lot of folks, especially those that are not coming from like a IT background or like are comfortable in the tech space in general, for them it's like they can't relate to it, you know, they don't see it as something of substance, as something real, and that is a big flaw in their reasoning, because it comes from ignorance. Obviously, it comes from ignorance, lack of knowledge, lack of understanding, and more importantly, the lack of willing to sit down, listen, and learn something new. Because this, we've never had anything like Bitcoin. Self-custody is a new concept that the world has never known, you know. But again, like with anything in life, you know, like this, the most basic things, like driving a car. When somebody's born, you're not a driver. You have to sit down, take a course, get in a car, you know, get into a few accidents until you learn. Then you become a driver, right? So this is no different. You have to sit down, learn. Okay, you'll screw up a few times along the way, but then you'll learn. You'll understand that this is the right approach. The biggest screw up you can do, the biggest accident you can get into, is to do nothing and go through what I went through, what an entire bloody country went through, is that when you think your life is so pristine and then you wake up the next morning and it's been completely formatted,
And you don't even understand why.
And you don't understand why. And nobody nobody explains it to you. And then you understand that you've been robbed. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
The criminal organization came, decided, okay, fuck you. You don't matter. Take away everybody's money. This is exactly what happens in a situation like this. So again, it's a decision. You either believe it or you don't believe it. But either way, the result is the same. If you believe it, you might take the proper measures to protect yourself and learn about this thing that thankfully we have. Because if we didn't have Bitcoin, the future would be very dire. Honestly, it would be very, I don't even want to imagine what kind of like horrendous future we would have. Thankfully, whoever Satoshi Nakamoto is, whoever they is, they are genuinely a gift from the heavens to the planet, because we finally have a viable exit that nobody can screw around with. Nobody can manipulate. Nobody can touch. Nobody can abuse. But it's so good to be true that a lot of people don't make the move. How retarded is that? You know, it's like, so it's going to take time. We're doing what we can here to help push the education, remove the technical hurdles. We're doing the work for you. You don't have to break your head. I will do it for you. I'll get you from zero to bulletproof in 2 hours, and you will learn how to use Bitcoin as comfortably as a credit card. Don't worry about it. But make the decision to want to move from where you are now to a better place. That's all you have to do. The resources to help you get there, there's plenty. There's us. There's many resources online. There's a lot of amazing other people doing this type of work that people can revert to. But it's, again, you have to make a conscious decision that I don't want to live a life of a donkey. I want to live as a free individual, and I want my kids, if you have them, to be able to determine what kind of future they want, not one dictated by some psychopath that has no interest in their well-being.
Yeah. And so I think we talked about it a bit, but like you at the Bitcoin Way, you talk with lots of different people and newcomers, you know, about Bitcoin. What's like the biggest mental hurdle that people need to get over before they start researching or adopting or maybe start listening to you? Like what's the main thing from your experience?
It's fear. You know, a lot of folks come to us. I mean, they have some basic understanding. They also come with a lot of preconceptions. A lot of them come with a lot of apprehensions. You know, the same, a lot of the same myths. You know, is the government going to stop it? Is it going to go to zero? Can it be stolen? Can it be this? Can it be that? You know, like a lot of the common myths that we've seen repeated over time. We do our best to debunk them. Okay. Like, I mean, we're very patient with everybody at the Bitcoin Way. There's absolutely no stupid questions. You ask whatever you want. It's no problem. Nobody, like everybody understands that this is new. Your question to you may be stupid, but it may not necessarily be a stupid question. As long as it makes sense to you at the end of the day, it improves your understanding of why you're here. That's all that matters. So we try to push that education, put people at ease, telling them, you know, explaining, you know, the fundamentals, the truth. We put the truth out. And then we tell them, we understand you don't have a tech background. You're not comfortable on a computer. You don't want to do the work. No problem. We will help you do it. We will do it for you, with you. And at the end of it, it's also going to become like an educational journey. So by the time I'm done explaining all the steps that are required, you should be in a position where you're like, you know what? It's not so bad. You know, it's like, it's not so different from using a credit card. I know how to send. I know how to receive. And then all of a sudden, you know, people become more interested on their own. Once, you know, they have a foundational structure in place, they learn, they ask questions, they come back. We do more advanced stuff. It's an ongoing journey. I mean, Bitcoin is not a set it and forget it solution, because it's technology. And like with any technology, there's progressions, there's fine tunings, there's improvements. And, you know, we make sure we're always on top of this, to make sure that the whole setup is always fine-tuned at all times.
So what's the biggest myth that you wish to debunk?
Biggest myth around Bitcoin?
Yeah.
The government's going to stop it. I'm like, buddy, if the government's going to stop it, they would have done it a long time ago. You know, like the government could have stopped it if they paid attention to it the way they are now. Back in 2009, they could have probably killed it. But, you know, fast forward 15 years later, the thing is so decentralized and secure, and it continues to exponentially become so every 10 minutes, now it's game over. And now it's not even in their best interest to try to destroy it. Any intelligent mm-hmm. government at this point would be rushing to adopt it in order to remain any to have any form of significance, you know, in the global in the global shape of the world going forward. But what it does is that, you know, it eliminates the corruption, because, you know, yeah. if you make a stupid decision, the Bitcoin's gone. You're not going to print it and bring it back that way. So it makes you think 100 times before you make, you know, make a stupid move. Wars disappear. Corruption disappears. Most bad things in the world disappear because you have to fund them. All these things don't just happen out of thin air. You have to fund them somehow. So if that money printer is destroyed, what are you going to fund it with? Are you expecting the population to give you their satoshis to go fight a war that they don't give a shit about? No one's going to give you anything.
Well, it's the same principle as what we talked about before in the meritocracy of the market will actually come back to the government, right? I last government, like last week, I listened to a podcast where they talked about how taxes started, right? And I think it was an example of a king of Belgium, if I get it right. Like, and first, the kings would propose what they would need money for, right? So they would say like, oh, this other kingdom is trying to, you know, steal land from us or whatever, and we need to fight them or else, you know, some of our people will get killed or we have to defend our border, right? So they would propose plans and then get money. But now we give money and we don't know about the plans, right? And even if there's taxes for, I don't know, you know, plastic use on fruits, what they make with the taxes on that plastic is not then spent on making better fruit or reducing plastic or whatever. It just goes in a big pot and then goes wherever. So I feel that once we would go back to Bitcoin or we would go to Bitcoin and the people are more sovereign, they will say, well, if you want part of our money, so, you know, the country that we live in becomes better, like I'm not necessarily opposed to taxes. I think it makes sense, you know, if you live in a country, taxes in some way. But you have to know what the plan is, and the people need to agree that that is actually a good plan, right? So we like we will go back to the sovereignty of the people, and the politicians or leadership are at the mercy of the people, and not the other way around as it is right now.
Yes, no, I completely agree. I mean, what Bitcoin will do is that it'll actually force governments to do what they were meant to do, and that's to serve the people, not to coerce them and to dictate how they're supposed to live their lives. You know, so if a government wants taxes, okay, what are they providing in return for these taxes?
Yeah.
Right now, they're not providing anything. Right now, they're threatening to throw you in jail or in some places to kill you if you don't pay taxes. What value is this? This is like value by corruption and tyranny. That's not a viable approach. This is not something that is sustainable or that should be tolerated.
Yeah. So but people know better than the people they are supposed to serve.
Exactly. And most people pay taxes not because they enjoy it, it's because they're petrified. Yeah. So unless you have your own army, okay, so if you want to go back to historical times, if you don't agree with someone, it would always break up into violence.
Mm.
You know, it's like survival of the fittest. But today, you know, with what's going on over the past decades, this attack on masculinity, politically correct this, politically correct that, everybody's afraid of their own shadows to speak, you know? Well, you know, you sort of like neuter a big percentage of the population, and that works when you're in a position of tyranny, because you have no opposition at that point. But you see now, this tide is starting to change. People are starting to realize that no, you know, this is not a valid point of authority. This is a criminal. This is a corrupt organization. These people should not be listened to, you know. And you know, there are armies being formed. And at some point, you know, if this doesn't get controlled somehow, I don't see how the peaceful approach can be sustained.
Yeah,
you know, like I mean, at some point, if you try to reason and it doesn't work, you know, and somebody bullies you, you may be tolerant, you may be fearful, you may be like passive, but at some point, you're going to reach your breaking point. And everybody's breaking point is at a different stage. But more importantly, you don't know how every individual reacts when they hit that breaking point. I've seen good people, people that have never harmed a fly in their life. Okay. They are holding people up at gunpoint, not because they want to hurt them, but because they're so desperate that they need to eat. They don't want to hurt them, but they want to do something so they can get some money to put food on the table.
Those are the scenes you see from Lebanon, right?
Okay.
Where people hold up a bank, not to rob the bank, but just get what they own. They only want their own money.
That's right. So if you're put in a predicament like this, are you all of a sudden a criminal or a terrorist? Or are you a victim, a casualty of a system that was designed to destroy your life? And it has when your turn comes.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
This is what I fear the most. Because, you know, if what happened in Lebanon reaches, like, goes global, but at the same time, you've got one hell of a problem on your hands, because then you won't feel safe going outside. I mean, in the US alone, if my math is right, they have over 300 million privately owned assault weapons. Okay, so if these people are subjected to the same lockout from their life savings as they did in Lebanon, what do you think will happen?
Yeah.
So
first thing
understand?
I think is total anarchy. Because there's no central, there's also no, I'd say, like, common belief or understanding or something that binds people, right? So you will get a lot of different factions of people, probably based on very basic principles, right? Like who has food, who has a gun, who has a car, or something. And then it goes down really quick.
Exactly. And this is what I'm trying to warn about, is because I've seen it happen in one place. I don't see how any other place is immune to it. Some people might think, this is just the Middle East. They're always been crazy over there. Sure. But you're all using the same cause, which is the fiat money that is going to shit. And it's eventually going to reach you. You're not, if you're living in some fancy place, doesn't mean you're immune to it. It just means it's going to take a little bit longer to get to you. But it's coming. So all these things nobody talks about, like not many people talk about, but these are the points that, you know, that keep me up at night in my thoughts. It's like, I don't want to see that happen anywhere. I don't want to see people get hurt. I don't want to see people having to find themselves in a predicament to do things they don't want to do. You know, here we go, that thumbs up again.
With
the camera effect.
But actually this, I think, is one of the, I don't know if it's first principles thinking, but it's thinking in a way that will help you to challenge your own beliefs, right? Like that, because it is... it has happened somewhere else, it means it can also happen where you live, right? And that, of course, like, the consequence of that is a scary thought, but it has helped me a lot to actually challenge myself, right? Like, I could feel or want to feel, or when my ego talks, it's like, no, that's never going to happen here because, whatever, Middle East, or we are better, or whatever stupid argument. But you have to accept that if it happened somewhere else, it can also happen here, especially, you know, you said that because the underlying system, the mechanics of the system is exactly the same. Holy shit, right? Like, then you open your mind to actually start gathering the information of the location where you are at, right? Okay, well, how does it work here? Is it really that bad, right? And all the people... I find it so interesting, right? Like when all these different little parts or steps along the way of a Bitcoin journey, when they click, right, you cannot look back, you cannot unsee all these things. So now when I see people talk about, well, for example, the situation in America where they say like, no, like soft landing, nothing's going to happen, America, this and that, and blah, 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 we have an army, or like any stupid argument they have, right? You now see that it's not true. It's not true because the underlying system is the same. And what you just said, I think, is what more people should understand, is It might take a little longer, but because the mechanics are the same, you can easily argue that it's going that way, right? You don't need any fancy research. It's just logical, sequential thinking in a way. And once you adopt that and keep like all the blah blah to the side, then you know, you cannot predict when it's going to go down and all these things, but you can start accepting and integrating just for yourself that, okay, I am also in a situation like this potentially in the future. So I need to start doing things, right? But I feel because it's so uncomfortable that a lot of people do, you know, they follow the ego path or they follow the, you know, simple explainers they hear from experts or professors or whatever to just, you know, ease their uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we live in a time that if you want to be comfortable, you're going to have to be uncomfortable for a little while to do the work, to do what's required to take you back into that comfort zone later on. Thankfully, you know, there are many jurisdictions around the world, you know, that are not as coercive and negative and are not adopting the same, you know, tyrannical games that other countries unfortunately are. And people are voting with their feet and their money, you know, they're packing up and they're leaving, as difficult as a decision as it is. Because, yeah, I mean, you have to uproot, you have friends, families, whatever. It's not an easy decision. But if it's the decision that determines whether you live like a free and dignified human being with a good quality of life, or not, the choice is not hard. You pack your stuff up, you move, you get you adjust, you go through that little adjustment period. It's not going to kill you. Eventually, you'll realize that, you know, you're in a much better situation. Your life is good, has actually leveled up. Your kids are okay. Their futures are looking bright. And, you know, things somehow fall into place. But in order to do this, you have to be in a position where you control your money. Because if you don't control your money, you have nothing in this world. You can't do anything without money. So you don't want to have your funds somewhere that somebody else is deciding what you can do with them.
Yeah.
And at the same time, debasing what they're worth.
Yeah. And this is also why, you know, you're a big advocate of self-custody, why that is then also so important once you move to Bitcoin, that you also adopt this, that, you know, self-custody of your Bitcoin. Like, can you share a bit about that?
Yes.
Not only technical, but also how it impacts people's sovereignty.
You cannot trust anybody anymore with your money. I don't care who it is. I don't care how well-intentioned they are. You cannot trust anybody with your money. The only person who's supposed to be responsible for your funds should be you. Because as we've seen too many times, you know, things blow up. You know, that path of least resistance, that path of convenience, that whole convenience thing is what usually leads to problems. Self-custody is not hard. Self-custody is just new. Okay, you just have to learn a few steps. Once you get to know them, you practice them a few times, they become normalized in your life, and you know, it's as if you've always known it since the beginning of time. But you have to, again, you have to be willing to accept that, okay, I need to learn this for the sake of X, Y, and Z, and do the work. Proof of work. You have to do the work. You know, the whole, like throwing the responsibility onto someone else, that's suicide now. Now you have to be a complete moron if you still believe in that ideology that somebody else is going to take care of your money. I mean, if that's the case, you deserve to lose it at that point if you still haven't learned anything from the past 3 years. So that's what I think. This is why I don't like third-party custodians. I don't advocate them. I never recommend them. Nobody's too stupid to understand and learn self-custody, no matter how old you are. We have clients of all ages. Most of them are of an older generation. I'm talking like mid-50s, 60s and up. Wow. Fully sovereign. Not coming from a technical background. Regular folks from all wakes of life.
Mm-hmm.
They understood it. Okay?
Yep.
So no one is too dumb for self-custody. But some people are too lazy to want to learn it. That's a whole other conversation.
Mm. Yeah, it actually touches on one of the like thought frameworks that has helped me also get more into this place where what you said, like, if you want to trust other people with your wealth or sovereignty, other people that also have egos, they have the same life problems, they have their same personal problems, like everyone has something, right? Like, it's not that those people that you give that responsibility have a super easy and nice life in a sense that they can give all their attention to you, right? No, it's they have their own personal things and own wants and needs and they have the same life. So it's just like, once you realize that they have the same problems, but they also are not smarter than you, they are not better than you, right? We are all the same. Then why in the world would you defer that responsibility to that other person, right? It does not make logical sense, you know. And some people would reply to that, yeah, but you have legal agreements, etc. But those are also other people that will then legitimize that, right? Or if you go to court and there's a judge, like it's to say, it's no different. It's actually even abstracting the responsibility further and further away because you put it in a legal document. And if I have a problem, well, then I go to court, etc. No, like this is, if you rationally go through it, that already sounds and is way more work and way more headache than going through the process of what you just said, learning how it works, battling those own beliefs, just being uncomfortable for a certain time and then be comfortable and also, I think, proud of yourself, you know, instead of keep living in this uncertainty and the deferring of the responsibility to other people, right? But in general, I think this is like a life challenge for anyone, right? Like, are you able to be uncomfortable for a short amount of time to, you know, short-term pain, long-term gain, instead of constantly staying in a state of, you know, restlessness or anxiety or, you know.
You know, there's a very powerful sense of accomplishment when you understand Bitcoin and get involved in it, and you understand the concept of self-custody. It's a very powerful position to be in, because you very quickly realize that financially speaking, you are untouchable. You know, because, you know, if somebody decides...
I like unfuckwittable.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, the whole concept of about fuck you money, this is it. I mean, there hasn't been better fuck you money before.
It doesn't matter how much you have.
It doesn't really matter how much you have. It's yours.
I agree.
You know, like, you want to send it to someone, you do it. There's no questions to ask, no permissions to ask. You know, you're not there pleading, oh, please, please, please let me send my money or let me take out my money. You know, you're not in that predicament anymore. You know, you are your own person in control of your own funds, your own life. It's an extremely powerful position to be in. It's extremely free position to be in.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, my advice to anyone is, like, if you're still lingering, wondering if this is like a scam or something that's going to disappear or something that's going to be coerced by the government, get your head out of wherever it is. Sit down, spend five minutes online.
Stop listening to other people.
and stop listening to this rubbish and hiding behind your finger, you know, trying to find all sorts of excuses not to do the work. Because ultimately, like I said, whether you believe it or don't believe it, the result is the same. When your turn comes, you are going to blow up just like the people before you. There's nothing special about you or your bank account that shields you from what's coming. So, It's not a hard decision. And, you know, again, there's plenty of resources. You want to pay someone to help you, you're more than welcome. You want to do the research on your own and do it for free online, you're welcome. Just do something.
Yep. That's interesting. It's interesting that it's such a psychological journey, right? Like, you have to overcome this hurdle. You have to think for yourself. Right?
Yeah.
It's think for yourself and trust yourself, and trust yourself that also the uneasiness or the anxious feeling you have about, you know, what money is or the inflation or whatever your, you know, starting point is of thinking about money, that is a correct feeling. And that look, once you go into that more, then you know you have to think about that for yourself. You can draw inspiration from other people, but you have to you have to do the work. Like the proof of work thing always comes back, right? You have to do it yourself. No one will tell you, like we are talking about this, but anyone listening who's maybe on the fence, like, yeah, go do it. Please do it. Like just spend a day, spend a weekend, like just do it.
And what helps, I mean, on this journey, it's good to, you know, get to know like-minded people. It really helps a lot. And in the Bitcoin space, there's a tremendous amount of some of the most amazing people out there. Like truly, I've never encountered any Bitcoiner, male or female, where the interaction wasn't instantaneous. It's as if it's almost like this notion, like you've known each other for a very long time, even though you've just met in the last 10 seconds. And everyone is so eager, willing to help. So you're not alone. No one's ever alone. If you need help, you can reach out. There's always someone out there willing to assist, especially in the Bitcoin community. It's almost mind-blowing. You know, when I first entered this whole space and just started to talk casually to people, asking basic questions just to become familiar with how things are, it was the first thing that really stood out to me. I'm like, wow. I mean, this is like you don't really encounter this very often. It's like almost every single person that you talk to is there for you.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually your network of, you can call them friends or like good acquaintances, but it's like almost like a brotherhood, like a big community, even if it's dispersed globally. You know, they're within, you know, an instant message away if you need something.
Yes.
And someone's always willing and ready to help. So it's important to become involved in this. It makes the transition a lot more fulfilling, a lot more, it gives you a much greater sense of security, a greater sense of belonging. And again, you know, if your life dictates that you have to uproot and move somewhere better, then that's what's written in the cards for you. This is where your future is meant to be. You know, like nothing is cemented in stone, you know. You just have to be willing to do the work, accept the changes, and continuously improve your life. And this is one of the most important pillars that you can start with, which is your money, because without it, you're nothing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I haven't met a Bitcoiner that I didn't like or had an instant connection with. And I think it's two things. Compared to fiat, which is a zero-sum game, this is not a zero-sum game, right? It's when I help you, you help me. It's an instant value exchange. You coming on the podcast, we talk about your company, like stuff like that. It's if I do the work, then I don't do it only for myself. I also do it for you and the other way around, right? So we are mutually benefiting from adopting this new system. And I think that is the biggest difference, that you know that from each other. There's that, and it's also, you know, and we talked about this now, right? This personal journey, this personal challenge, integration of these new things that you learn about yourself, the world, the system, etc. Like, you know that this other person, I know that you did the work too, right? And I know how hard that is. So I commend you for that, and you commend me for that, right? And that is I think what makes a connection between people who are into Bitcoin and understand it and are also, you know, trying to share about it. It's like, I know you did the work, and I know that it wasn't hard, and I know that it wasn't easy, right? And that is, I think, how you gain initial respect, and that kicks off like any relationship with
I completely agree. And we try to, you know, like we try to pass on that ethos to all individuals during our consults. Like we're very strict about how we do things. We absolutely take no shortcuts in anything that we do. We are very picky about the hardware that we recommend. We don't sell anything ourselves. We're really based on, you know, recommendations based on tests. So whatever the best products are out there available at the time of the consult, these are the ones that we recommend. And we do the work exactly like it's supposed to. We don't take workarounds. We don't take shortcuts. We don't skip steps. We don't do any of that stuff. We're going to do it right, or we're simply not going to do it. It's that simple. We don't support anything else that doesn't adhere to the Bitcoin ethos. If you support censorship, we disqualify you. If you work with chain analysis, we disqualify you. If you adopt any of that bullshit on any level, we disqualify you. So either you're doing it right as well, or we disqualify you. It's that simple. As far as we're concerned, like, this is our ethos, you know, with regards to getting people into proper self-custody. No fuss, no mess, no BS, and absolutely no shortcuts.
Yeah. So this podcast is obviously aimed at helping millennials understand, you know, build safe wealth in Bitcoin. Can you talk a bit about how you help your clients do that? And especially, I'm super interested in, like, inheritance planning, right? Like, as many millennials have young families, they also get into Bitcoin to preserve their wealth for their families. Like, how do you view that?
Well, we don't have any off-the-shelf solutions. So, like, we bring in, like, you know, like 25 years of cybersecurity, encryption, and all that in all our consults. So we personalize a formula based on each individual's life situation, you know, their technical know-how, what they're comfortable, not comfortable with. And we, like, through a conversation, we devise a plan that, you know, marries the security with the practicality so that we know that they're not going to, you know, make a mistake somewhere along the way, you know, that we keep those probabilities at a very low level. You know, we have both offline solutions and online solutions that, you know, we deploy accordingly so that people can safeguard their information the way it's supposed to. We default to air-gapped cold wallets, always, no exception. Bitcoin nodes are a must, no exception. Yes, Foundation, fantastic product. So all of these good habits we ingrain in all our consults. You know, like, we will never recommend closed source hardware or software. Custodial things, they're out as well. I mean, or they're kept to a very limited use case, in the case of some Lightning wallets, what have you. But with regards to the safeguarding of your funds, the whole self-custody thing, that is 100 open source or verifiable source only. And, like, we implement a lot of, like, high-end security features with regards to that setup. We go even as far as locking down the internet on a router level to prevent all sorts of, you know, online rubbish from even affecting your devices that you're using. And that now, with the advent of AI, we're able to integrate it in such a way that it's roaming. So even if you're not home, you're still protected by the same mechanism protecting all your devices at home. It's extremely powerful, very useful. Not many people are paying attention to that type of service yet, because we're not there yet. But, you know, I keep saying that as the value of Bitcoin continues to skyrocket, so will the attempts to steal it. And those attempts are likely going to come, you know, about from online attacks rather than physical ones. And that's where, you know, I'm expecting people to start paying more attention to protecting themselves online. And because they all interface with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is, you know, it's online. So you're connecting to the internet. So if your computer is not locked down or protected, if your phone is not locked down, if your router is not locked down, you know, like, all of these things, they matter. We have, you know, we have services that look at them in depth. We provide services that you know, that safeguard all these things.
Yeah. And so, with regards to inheritance planning, like, how do you help people set up?
Yeah, of course. Inheritance planning, we can do it two ways. You know, the manual way is where we devise something customized with them, which involves a lot of education, you know, direct education with all the folks involved. Or if you want to automate it a bit more, we have privacy-focused collaborative custody where there's an inheritance plan built into that ecosystem, which is completely non-custodial. And it makes things a little bit more streamlined for those that are not technical, where you just come in, literally press a button, claim inheritance, answer a few questions, and just follow the instructions. And that takes care of that. Otherwise, if you want something a bit more custom made, this is, you know, it's on a case by case basis. You know, we put something together that makes sense, that we know that only you know about, and obviously those that are in your inner trusted circle know about. And that's how it becomes as secure as possible. We don't have off the shelf copy paste solutions that we just deploy, you know, with each person that comes our way.
Yeah.
But inheritance planning is definitely a must, you know, if you want to leave, you know, whatever you've accumulated to someone that you care about, it's definitely not optional.
Yeah. All right. Well, I love this conversation. Thanks so much for coming on. I want to ask you the last question that I ask everyone at the end of my conversation. And that is, what is a core belief that you will never let go?
Never let your life be dictated by others. Never.
Love that, man.
You live your life with dignity and honor, but it's your life, your decisions. You know, you live by the consequences of those that you make.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Right. Where can people find you and the Bitcoin Way online?
Yeah, I mean, we're very active on Twitter, social media, pretty much everywhere. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's V4BTC. That's the handle that I usually use on screen. You can also follow the Bitcoin Way account, which is the Bitcoin Way _. And there's the website, you know, thebitcoinway.com. We're active, you know, in many, many different realms online. So whichever one that suits you, feel free to call. We have a free 30-minute call for anyone. If you just want to reach out, have a conversation, you know, there's no commitment, no obligations, just to get to know one another better and see if we can help you in any aspect possible. We're happy to do that.
Awesome. I will link to all of that in the show notes. And thanks again for coming on. Would love to stay in touch and perhaps we can do this again.
Absolutely.
In the future.
Thank you for having me. This has been awesome.
Thanks, man. Cheers. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be amazing if you could rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. It will help us educate more millennials on the importance of Bitcoin. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter. I'm BramK, that's at BRAMK. And if you are or know someone who has an interesting perspective on Bitcoin that's worth sharing, hit me up. I read and reply to every single message. I appreciate your support and hope you'll be here for the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.